President Obama says he's confident his administration will fix the problems with the government's health insurance exchange website. But some are calling for the firing of Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius. We'll get our Week in Review guests this hour to weigh in on the health.gov problems, and we will welcome your views, too. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 8 o'clock. As we do every Friday at this time, we will welcome in two guests from different political perspectives to talk about the top political news of the week, and we invite you to talk about it with us. Or bring up a topic from the news this week at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us Ruth Conniff, editor of The Progressive Magazine. Good morning.
Morning.
And Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. Good morning to you.
Morning, Joy. Good morning, Ruth.
And congratulations, Ruth. I think this is the first time we're talking to you with a new title, editor of the Progressive Magazine.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks a lot.
So let's talk, though, about this hearing yesterday on Capitol Hill and Republicans on this House panel looking into the government's troubled health care insurance website say the problems reflect deeper flaws of the Affordable Care Act. Is that what you think, Dan?
I do. I think if these website problems get fixed, I mean, the real problems with Obamacare are going to be exposed. And I'm talking about the shortage of signups, the higher costs, the out-of-pocket costs, the high deductibles. I think they need a target of 7 million people. I think they're going to fall woefully short of that because people are going to get into it finally, hopefully, and really see what Obamacare is and what it's going to cost them.
What do you think of all these problems, Ruth? Does this reflect deeper flaws with the Affordable Care Act?
Well, first of all, I think what the hearings yesterday reflect are Republican politics. They didn't want this law to go into effect even after it passed. They fought it every step of the way. They've tried to demonize the Affordable Care Act as, you know, this horrible example of socialism coming to our shores. And, you know, it's just not. It's a popular program. It expands health care to people who otherwise wouldn't have it. And so that is a completely separate issue from the screw-up with the health care rollout and the website. And that is, in fact, a technological screw-up that's a real problem. But, you know, it's just the Republicans just aren't credible because they spent so much time, you know, shutting down the government, costing billions of dollars, nearly crashing the international economy, all in an effort to prevent this, you know, reasonable and much-needed expansion of health care to folks who don't have it in the, you know, the only industrialized country in the world that doesn't cover everybody. And, you know, they now their website's screwed up, so they're making a huge amount of hay out of that. But we're going to forget it in a few weeks. You know, it's going to be fixed. And it's a hugely onerous task for the Department of Health and Human Services to build a site that has to be compatible with hundreds of different health insurance providers and dozens of state databases and 36 states that refused to set up their own exchanges, which would be so much easier than having the federal government take that on. So, you know, given all of that, it's not surprising that it's kind of a mess on the rollout side on the website, but it's going to cover people and people are going to like it. And actually, I think that's going to be the problem for the Republicans in the election, is that people are going to get health insurance who need it and otherwise wouldn't have it, and they're going to like that.
No, Secretary Sebelius says the website is a lot better today than it was on October 1st and that the administration is determined to make it perfect. Dan, what about that?
Well, I assume that in time it will get better and it will be accessible. But in the meantime, again, we have this problem. We have spent, the numbers are all over the board, but $600 million just for the website at this point. Somebody has to be accountable. They've had 3 years, 3 years to get this thing set up. And it wasn't ready on October 1st. They, you know, the Republicans, as Ruth mentioned, held up, you know, the negotiations a while back and shut down the government. But, you know, they left several proposals there for the administration to take, one of which was to delay this thing for 1 year. And now we have Democratic senators who are up for re-election next year who are concerned about the effects of Obamacare and all of the problems, and they're calling for a delay in 1 year. So the administration could have could have easily addressed this big problem that they have by accepting this proposal. None of this would be happening then if that would have been the case.
Just delay it, Ruth.
Well, this is the problem. A further delay was not going to make it run more smoothly. And in fact, the Republicans in Congress hauled Kathleen Sebelius up in front of them to say, how dare you appropriate funds to implement Obamacare? By what authority do you do that? And, you know, if she had not done that, we would have an even bigger problem. So, the thing is, we have a technological problem. We have this Canadian company running this rollout. It's, you know, there's often this comparison, how could it be that the Obama team, which ran this incredibly sophisticated internet operation in his first election in 2008, how can they be doing such a lame job of the Affordable Care Act? And the answer is that it's this incredibly cumbersome process. They have to meet all of these different regulatory goals, and they've got this mass of a private healthcare industry that, you know, because it's able to lobby Congress and has a lot of power, is still a huge part of our healthcare system. If we had a Medicare for All system, the government could roll it out as quickly and efficiently as it rolled out Medicare. So, you know, that unfortunately is not what's happening here. But for the Republicans to say, look, we could have fixed this problem easily, you know, after they just reopened the government, which they tried to shut down, after they just told Kathleen Sebelius that she shouldn't even be able to spend a nickel to start to get this ball rolling, is just not credible.
Contractors who testified at the House Energy and Commerce Committee yesterday cited a lack of testing on the full system and last-minute changes for all of the problems, and they're blaming the government for that, Dan. So, you know, it's just a big project. There was some last-minute changes. Maybe there was a lack of testing, but it'll all be worked out.
Well, I'm sure given some time, it will be worked out. But again, it just underscores the problems that currently exist with the website. There is finger pointing going on. Someone has to be accountable. We're talking, again, $600 million, taxpayers' dollars. Who authorized this? Why did it cost this much? And why do we have a system that's broke? Those are questions that need to be answered.
So someone needs to be accountable. Ruth, I'll start with you on this one. What about the calls, like from Congressman Paul Ryan, that Kathleen Sebelius should be fired?
I mean, I think that you know, they're saying that because they really want to make a lot of hay out of this website screw up, because the fact that they cost several billion dollars by shutting down the government is bad for the Republicans. And so they'd like to say that this is a bigger problem than it is. It is going to be solved, and it's not going to fundamentally alter what the Affordable Care Act is or how it works. I think Sebelius is presiding over something that's a mess, and I think that, you know, it's an honorable tradition for the heads of agencies that, you know, where there's a mess like this going on, to offer their resignations. She could offer a resignation to the president, and the president could decide what to do about it. But in this toxic political environment, I think it's really a distraction. And I think the truth is, we have the Affordable Care Act. It wasn't going to go away even when they shut down the government over it. It's going to work even though the website is screwed up. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what's going to happen.
Dan?
Not so sure it's going to work. Again, they're counting on 7 million people to sign up. I think they need about 2.7 young people to sign up to make this thing work, because they're healthy for the most part. And they also, part of this legislation, allows the young people to be on their parents' insurance until they're age 26. So it seems like how are you going to make this work if you're allowing them to be on their parents' program, yet you need them to sign up? And if they have any problems signing up, and you know how young people are, they're high-tech people, relative to me for sure, and they're going to get on this thing, and they're going to have troubles with it, and they're not going to stay on it. They're not going to sign up. They're just not, and they're going to have to be sought out by the IRS, and they're going to have to be fined. That's what's going to happen, and it's just got too many flaws. Let's put it that way.
Do you, Dan, though, think like Congressman Ryan that Sebelius should resign over this or be fired?
I think Ruth made a good suggestion, and that is that she offer a resignation, let the president decide. But the president and this administration has had some problems as far as accountability. We still haven't found out the details of Benghazi. The Fast and Furious, we don't really have real answers to that. There are these IRS questions about holding up 501c4s. I mean, on and on it goes. And who's responsible? We don't have answers to many questions from this administration, and this is another one.
And the Obama administration says it will give Americans an extra 6 weeks to obtain coverage before they risk any kind of penalty. So those who buy coverage through the exchanges have until March 31st now to sign up. The administration says this is unrelated to the technical problems with the website. They say that it's to clear up confusion about when people would face a penalty. Do you buy that, Dan?
Well, I think it is related to the website. I don't think there's any question about that. To give them 6 weeks, it will be helpful, I think, for the opportunity for people to sign up. There's no question about that. But it's all related to this website. And as I mentioned earlier at the onset here, once this website is cleared up and the real flaws of Obamacare will be exposed, then they will look back at this time with the website and say, well, that was easy.
Mm-hmm. Ruth, a comment on the extra 6 weeks to obtain coverage?
I think the extra 6 weeks is going to deal with the problem that that Senator Kopanky pointed out, which is that, young people are going to have trouble getting on right now. It's going to be discouraging. They do need these young, healthy people because those are the folks that pay the premiums but don't use the health care, and therefore the insurance companies can continue to make a profit. And that's what the insurance companies have lobbied hard for. It's also really good for folks who have children in their 20s who don't have the kinds of jobs that come with benefits packages. And I think those parents are going to help their kids navigate the website. And as the website smooths out, I think it's not going to be that big a deal. You're also supposed to be able to call a call center and use paper and pencil to sign up for health insurance. I think what's really important to point out here is that states like Wisconsin that refuse to expand Medicaid, and we are spending more money in the state of Wisconsin to ensure that the working poor don't get access to health care. It's just an outrage, and I sat through those hearings and listened to that strictly partisan debate and vote. These are the states that are having problems. They said, forget you, Obama and Obamacare. We're not going to help you. We're not going to set up an exchange. And furthermore, to the, working poor in our state, we're not going to let you get health insurance. So those are the states that are having problems. Kentucky, in contrast to Wisconsin, which set up its own state exchange, it's running smoothly. So this stuff can work, and there has to be some goodwill in this country, finally, after 50 years of talking about this, and really 100 years, because Teddy Roosevelt talked about it, to say, look, people should have health care. It should be a right. It shouldn't be so complicated, and it shouldn't be driven by the highest possible profits for the insurance companies. It should be driven by allowing people to get to the doctor when they need to. And that can happen. It's happening in places where they have state exchanges and a Medicaid expansion. And it could happen if we had a more aggressive and more progressive program than the Affordable Care Act, and we expanded Medicare for all.
Let me jump in. We're gonna take calls on the problems with the Health Exchange website and other related issues to the Affordable Care Act. And we will talk about other top news stories of the week. As this is The Week in Review, I'm Joy Cardine with Ruth Conniff, editor of the Progressive Magazine, and Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking this week with Ruth Conniff, editor of the Progressive Magazine, and Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator, about the top political news stories of the week. We welcome your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Talking about the Affordable Care Act and problems with the Health Insurance Exchange website, and we'll talk a little bit later in the show about the race for governor in Wisconsin. Let's take some calls now. Matt in Milwaukee. Hi, Matt.
Good morning. The problems with the technical rollout are not unusual for a product launch of this size. There was no opportunity due to its nature and its very public creation for a soft rollout. And that's probably the same with the complaints about no beta testing. And other technical interfaces have the benefit of being able to exclude segments of the market, which is what marketing is. You play to the people who buy your product. So Apple can assume a level of technological savviness even with the machines that their clients or their customers have. Same thing with Amazon. If you have a primitive machine with low resolution, low processing power, Amazon won't work on your machine. And
all
Amazon
right.
can assume if you're running something from 1989, you probably don't have that much money anyway. But
all
we
right.
don't have that luxury, right?
Well, this is not unusual given the scope of the project, Dan.
Well, again, it seems to me the way this was rolled out on October 1st and the problems that they're occurring, they rolled it out prematurely. They didn't want to delay it. Again, Matt's talking about a soft rollout. Why couldn't they have done a soft rollout? Why couldn't they? I think one of the people, the tech people that was part of the panel yesterday was asked if he, who was working on Obamacare, the website, was asked if he tried to get on. He tried to get on, and he couldn't get through it. He himself couldn't and was working on it. So, I mean, it's obvious there were problems. This is an embarrassment to the administration. You only get one time to make a first impression. This is a very bad impression for Obamacare.
Let's take another call. Steve in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm watching this pretty carefully, and I think that both your commentators are right in a way. I mean, this is a short-term problem. It's going to go away. But on the other hand, as we reach out into 2015, if they don't have those younger, healthier people in there to essentially subsidize the older, less healthy people, the risk pool is going to spiral to downward. And and I know your one caller says, well, the insurance companies are taking the money, but if you take all of the profits of all the insurance companies and add them all together, it's a pittance compared to the cost of our national health care. And if you look out to 2015 when they reprice, because right now their pricing is like a pig in a poke. They don't know what they're pricing, and next year they'll know. And those prices, I believe, are going to rise. And that's going to cause more, we're going to go right back to the problem the insurance companies had a few years ago that brought us, that's why they kind of got on board with ACA. And the insurance companies are fully on board here. If you don't think they are, you're just wrong. Just look at their stock charts. They're doing great with ACA. And I think that this is essentially going to really run on the rocks in 2015. And I think that we have to look at our health care spending. We get too much health care. We spend too much on our providers. And that's why, like your other one caller said, in Europe they have this. But what they don't have in Europe is they don't have millionaire doctors. We just have to cut back on the provider pay.
Yeah, Steve, I've got to jump in because we have a lot there to chew on, and I want to have Ruth comment that this we're just going to have higher. It's not going to be affordable care. The insurance rates are just going to keep on going up.
Well, I actually think that the Affordable Care Act is not going to be such a great deal for young people, and this is one of the criticisms that Wendell Potter, who is the health insurance company whistleblower, who really is an advocate for national health care now, made of the program initially. It's better. It is certainly the Medicaid expansion, which unfortunately Wisconsinites are not going to be able to take advantage of, is very significant. But the elimination of pre-existing conditions, that bar people who actually need health care from getting health care because it's more expensive to insure them, that is very significant. Letting kids continue on their parents' health insurance program is also very significant. But young people who are floating out there, if they get into some kind of a catastrophic accident, could still end up with bankrupting hospital costs. And that is, it is the leading driver of bankruptcy in our country. So it doesn't fix that. And then to the caller's point about national health care, he sort of seemed to come down on both sides of that. It is so much more efficient and so much less costly. And one reason is that we are financing all these different health care bureaucracies. Republicans like to equate bureaucracy with the federal government. But in truth, Medicare runs so much more efficiently because private health insurance companies spend a third of every health care dollar just on administration. And as the caller pointed out, they're soaring stock prices and, making themselves rich. So it is not efficient, and it is not covering everybody to have this patchwork private health care market. We have this kind of combined effort now with the Affordable Care Act to take that private health care market and expand it a little bit and do away with some of the most predatory practices of the insurance industry in keeping people from getting health care. But, it's not a perfect solution, and we could save a lot of money by doing Medicare for All.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Ruth Conniff and Dan Kopanky. This is The Week in Review. If you'd like to join us with an issue from the news this week, It can be anything. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I want to move on to, it's related, but we released the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College survey this week on a number of different issues, and one of them was on the Affordable Care Act. And most of us in Wisconsin, Dan Kopanky, say we are in favor of the Affordable Care Act and the various elements of it, including the individual mandate. And we also didn't think that the Republicans in Congress should have tied this to that last budget. And there was a number of questions related to that. What's your reaction to, really, we in Wisconsin anyway say we like the Affordable Care Act?
Well, maybe, we'll see what happens again when this is fully put out to the public and they have access to it. They don't right now. In America, I think there's about 15% of us that didn't have coverage or don't have coverage currently. The question has come up, why don't we address those 15%? Why do we take 85% of us who have some kind of coverage and for the most part like it, turn it upside down so 100% of us are affected, not just the 15 that do need coverage? I fully admit that. Getting to Ruth's comments, about previous, conditions and so on, that needs to be addressed. We did address it here in Wisconsin with the HRSA program that was up and running for several administrations. It was a good thing. It did provide coverage for those that needed it that had pre-existing conditions. So, I mean, there are ways of addressing this thing without the entire, 100% of us being affected by Obamacare. As far as the poll in Wisconsin, health insurance, health coverage, medical coverage is huge in the minds of all of us, and it's important. And so I can see why that poll came out, maybe 50% or whatever it was, in favor of Obamacare. But, again, there are other ways of doing this, and I think that's what the Republicans are looking at. In Wisconsin, again, several administrations, we've had 90%+ of us have had some kind of coverage. So, again, in Wisconsin, we've done well in the past. We will in the future without Obamacare, and we need to continue that. That's the point that many of us are making. And, again, we have just scratched the surface of what this is really going to cost us. Estimates are going up all the time as far as the cost of Obamacare in 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, and it is absolutely affecting employment out here because employers are looking at these costs and really holding off adding employees because of the cost of Obamacare and other things that are going on in Washington and Madison.
Ruth?
Well, I think change makes people uncertain, but really employers have been looking for relief from providing health care for people for a long time. So, I don't think that employers are going to be unhappy if their employees are able to get health insurance without it costing them a great deal more in direct compensation, which is a system that we have now. I think the Affordable Care Act is going to be, it is very popular. It's very, part of one of the reasons that the website was so jammed initially is because it was so popular with people who wanted to sign up and get some health care. I think it's going to work. It's not going to go all the way to what we should get to, but I think it's going to work. And, the thing is, we have the Affordable Care Act through a political process that put in this confusing web of private insurance plans into a healthcare system, and it's taken a while to get this clunky thing off the ground, and it would be a lot cheaper if, Medicare spends about 6% of its as opposed to 20% in the private health insurance industry on direct medical services. So, in addition to that overhead that you're talking about with the private health care industry, you've also got inflated prices for drugs. And we had a fight here over whether we could band together and negotiate for better prices from drug companies so people don't have to get on buses and go to Canada to buy their drugs, and that was lost. So, there's inefficiencies, but the inefficiencies are in our private health care system in this country. They're not in this modest expansion of coverage for folks.
In the news this morning, Congressman Paul Ryan and Senator Harry Reid say there is not going to be a grand bargain on the budget. They say that the best Washington can do is a small deal that will take the edge off of sequestration. Official negotiations on the budget will start next week. Ruth Conniff, what are you hoping comes of this committee that was formed from last week's budget deal?
I'm hoping that the Republicans wake up and see how much damage they're doing to themselves, and they're about to lose the Virginia governor's race over the government shutdown, so I think that's a wake-up call. I mean, you know, this waste of billions of dollars in order to make a political point that's extremely unpopular with the public is not, you know, it's not helping them, and I think that a lot of folks in the party are seeing that. Now, unfortunately, we have people like our own Congressman Paul Ryan, who tried to stay out of that Tea Party battle, resurfacing with his plan to cut Medicare and Social Security. And remember how popular that was, you know, when he was being tailed by all these grannies in sneakers holding up signs saying, don't cut my Medicare. So, you know, I worry about the grand bargain idea. So I don't, you know, I feel somewhat relieved that they're, you know, it doesn't seem like they're moving in that direction. Cutting entitlements has been the dream of these folks for a long, long time. And it's real danger. And, you know, that's going to be the next fight.
Dan?
I think what I would hope would come out of this would be a realization from both sides that for the good of future generations, we have to address our spending issue here in the United States. We've just passed $17 trillion in debt. Obamacare is going to add to it. And it doesn't seem to be any relief in sight. And that's for me, that's the number one thing. If both sides would just come to grips with the fact that we are spending more than we're taking in, we cannot continue this. Our deficits continue to be there around the $1 billion deficit. Or trillion, excuse me. We cannot continue and sustain this. And, you know, unfortunately, Europe has experienced all of this, and so we have a template, and we seem to be following it, and it doesn't bode well for the future. So I hope that would be the outcome.
Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin says she certainly believes another government shutdown can be avoided and that the committee needs to work out a path to keep the government from going from one crisis to the next. Republican Senator Ron Johnson says he wants to avoid another shutdown too, but the parties first need to agree on the scope of the problems that we face. So, Dan Kopanky, do you think that Congress will manage to avoid another shutdown in January?
I think so. I don't think either side wants this as we head into 2014 in an election year. I think it's encouraging that both senators from Wisconsin said basically the same thing. And Senator Johnson did say basically what I said, that we have to address the scope of the problems that we have here with our budget, and that is the spending and the fact that we have this huge, huge debt. So if that happens, I think many of us in the United States will be happy if that is addressed and in the right manner.
Mm-hmm. Ruth?
I am just kind of fascinated to see if they try to run this government shutdown up the flagpole again, because it's so disastrous for them politically, which is more important to them, of course, than the fact that it's disastrous for the folks who couldn't get their infant formula and their, you know, couldn't take their children to the Head Start Center. It's such a loser. And they suppose that, you know, the deficit scolds and the folks that are supposedly fiscal conservatives cost this country several billion dollars for no reason at all. So, you know, I can't believe that they would do it again. But the Republicans have a huge problem. They're in a meltdown situation. They're hostage to these Tea Partiers who really don't care. They're anarchists. And it'll be very interesting to see how they manage that problem internally. And I hope that our country gets through it without doing a tremendous amount of damage. And, you know, to the other point about the deficit and the debt, which is, you know, been steadily shrinking as the, you know, hype from the Paul Ryan camp expands. You know, inflation is down, interest rates are down. They continue to say this is a terrible problem. It's, you know, the number one concern of students on college campuses. They have this phony group, Fix the Debt, that goes around to campuses and tries to stir up the idea that a bunch of 20-year-olds are mostly concerned not about the crushing college debt that they themselves are going to carry into their 40s, but about this vague threat of this national debt, and therefore we need to slash things like, you know, home heating for the elderly and food assistance for the poor. It's just a bunch of nonsense, and it's manufactured by folks on Wall Street who want to see the government slashed. They want to see things privatized and their profits increase. And I just think people are very cynical about whether Republicans at this point are true stewards of our country and care about governing effectively, and that's a problem.
Let me ask you, Dan Kopanky, to react to the are Republicans, establishment Republicans, in a civil war with Tea Party Republicans?
Well, there's no secret there's a difference of opinion on issues. But, you know, a lot of those Tea Party Republicans in the House were elected in 2010. And they were sent to Washington with, you know, that charge that they were going to address this huge burgeoning government deficit. And they're doing that. They're doing what their constituents want them to do. When Senator Cruz went back to Texas, I mean, he was welcomed as a hero. And he said, I would rather be popular in Texas and not popular in Washington, because these people have sent me there to do a job. And that's what he did. You can argue about the shutdown. We can talk about it. But at the end of the day, his main premise was, let's hold off on Obamacare 1 year. 1 year. And now we have six senators, Democrat, talking the same language. We have Democratic pundit Doug Schoen saying, let's hold it off 1 year. That's exactly what Senator Cruz wanted. And again, it would have been an out for this administration, and they wouldn't have all of this embarrassment of this program not working if, in fact, they had done that.
We need to wrap this topic up and move on to some others. But do you think that, Dan Kopanky, that this feud is going to result in some sort of backlash at the polls in 2014 for Republicans?
I'm not sure. I really am not. It's hard to predict that. But I don't, at this point, I don't think so, because, again, if we go ahead with this Obamacare, and that is at the forefront of the issues out here, and it's obviously, we've talked about it a long time here, but it's on the news constantly. And if it doesn't work out and people aren't happy, it definitely will work in the favor of these people and not against them.
Mm-hmm. Ruth, what do you think?
I think that it's going to be a popular program, and I think that, you know, I think the Republicans have a real problem on their hands, and I would just like to point out, because people don't point it out enough in public, that the budget deficit as a percent of GDP is sinking like a stone. So this alarmism on that issue and the excuse that it is for, you know, for really hurting things that help people, I think it's really got to be called out.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Ruth Conniff, editor of the Progressive Magazine, and Dan Kopanky. He is a former Republican state senator and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. Coming up on this edition of The Week in Review, we'll have our Week in Review quiz, and we'll talk about gay marriage in New Jersey. We'll talk about a Wisconsin Supreme Court case over the state's domestic partner registry. And we'll talk much more state politics, including the race for governor in Wisconsin, some developments there, including some of our poll results from Wisconsin Public Radio and St. Norbert College. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine with Ruth Conniff and Dan Kopanky, talking about the top state and national news stories of the week. It's time now for our Week in Review quiz. You've got about 2 months' worth of shopping days until Christmas, but the holiday shopping frenzy is already shaping up to be even crazier this year. Which Wisconsin-based retailer announced this week that it plans to open its doors for Christmas shopping on Thanksgiving Day? 1-800-642-1234 if you have the answer or a guess. 1-800-642-1234. Which Wisconsin-based retail store is going to open its doors to holiday shoppers on Thanksgiving Day? We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and we will announce the winner and the answer at the end of the show. We will offer the winner one of the books that we featured on the program recently. Let's talk more about the news of the week. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie backed off his challenge to end same-sex marriages. So New Jersey becomes the 14th state to allow gay marriages. Ruth Conniff, how big a deal is this?
I think it's part of a trend that's a really big deal. You know, this country has really come a long way in a short time on this issue, and I think Christie recognizes that it's not a loser for him to continue to fight this. all across the country, people are recognizing that their friends and colleagues and siblings and loved ones are gay and deserve to get married just like heterosexual people do. And so it's just been a domino effect in state after state. And it's really, it's heartening and it's impressive to see how fast that's happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Chris Christie, who had appealed and asked to delay implementation, dropped that. And I think it's a sign that he recognizes that it's just not, it's a loser. It's not going to happen. This is the wave of the future. This is where we're going. Young people are not opposed to gay marriage.
Dan, your reaction to Chris Christie's decision?
Well, I'm certain that he weighed, you know, the continuing this battle with public money, going against the state Supreme Court is, you know, it's going to be a long time to appeal this, and it's going to cost a lot of taxpayer dollars, and he probably just weighed that and said, you know, I'm dropping it. And I'm not sure he didn't say that he was in favor of it or anything, because obviously he was challenging it. But you could see the handwriting. And I'm sure that there are some conservatives in the state that are very upset with him right now. But I think he probably made a decision based on the best for taxpayers in the state of New Jersey.
Well, this week, the state Supreme Court in Wisconsin heard arguments on Wednesday over the constitutionality of the state's domestic partner registry. Ruth Conniff, first, any fears that this domestic partner registry, which gives some benefits and legal protections to same-sex or unmarried couples, any fears that that's going by the wayside?
Sure. I mean, I think that's always a fear, and I think that, you know, for Wisconsinites, because we don't have gay marriage in our state, this is a really, really important protection for couples, you know, who have committed to be together all their lives, have children together, and one partner's in the hospital, the other partner can go and take care of that person. You know, you get to share benefits. There, it's really important as a practical matter, and I hope that our state Supreme Court does the right thing.
Yeah. Is that domestic partner registry substantially similar to the institution of marriage, Dan Kopanky, as its critics say?
Some people think it is. I mean, I'm not going to weigh in on that because I'm not up on the registry and exactly what it is. I think it'll be interesting to hear and see the arguments and see what the Supreme Court does in this case because of the, again, 2006 constitutional amendment, which was, I think, overwhelming in the state. It was close to 60% did not approve of gay marriage. So in light of all of that, we'll just have to, I guess, sit back and watch the Supreme Court in action and see how this comes out.
Let's move on to another issue. According to the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College survey, Governor Walker's approval rating is 50%. We also asked, does Governor Walker deserve re-election or not? And 49% said he does not deserve to be re-elected. 46% said he does. Now, that's, you know, within the margin of error, but what do you make of those numbers? Dan Kopanky first.
Well, Wisconsin, again, nationally, is for president has not been a red state. We've had Democratic governors here with Doyle for 8 years. On the other hand, people vote with their pocketbooks, and there's no denying the fact that the state of Wisconsin's financial situation is much improved to what it was 3 years ago. So I think at the end of the day, we keep hearing about positive things happening, whether it be a budget surplus or job growth, and I know that he hasn't hit his 250,000 yet, but we are at least going in the right direction. You look at our pension funds, our sound in Wisconsin, there's a lot of positives that we can point to in the state of Wisconsin relative to just our neighbors to the south and even to the west. We're in much better shape, and I think at the end of the day, we continue in this direction, I think the governor will be reelected.
Do you think the governor's worried about those numbers, Ruth Conniff?
Sure. I mean, if he runs for reelection, and I think he's weighing a presidential run, and so he may be deciding whether or not to run for reelection right now. But I just was struck by what Senator Kopanky said, because I think you're right. People vote with their pocketbooks, and I think the governor has tried to make the case that therefore they should vote for him. But the problem is actually we're doing much, much worse. Our unemployment rate is much higher than our neighboring state. of Minnesota, there's kind of a direct contrast. The pension fund, it's not Walker's fault that we have this AAA-rated, fabulous, fully funded pension fund in the state of Wisconsin. And in fact, he is trying to set up a committee to look into privatizing that, and people are really worried about the potential destruction of the soundness of our pension fund. We're borrowing more money than ever in history in order to try to pretend that things look rosy because there's a quote-unquote surplus, but we're going to have to pay off that debt, which is what gives us the surplus. But most of all, people don't have jobs. You know, our jobs numbers are lag the national recovery, and they have for the entire time that Walker's been in office. And you can't tell people that things are going well economically when in their own lives they see that they're not. So I think that is Walker's biggest problem. It was his biggest campaign promise to create jobs. He's doing abysmally by his own measure and by the measure of our neighboring states. And so he's vulnerable.
Well, you brought it up, Ruth. Let's talk a little bit about whether or not Governor Walker is going to run for re-election for governor. There was a piece in Fighting Bob written by Republican political strategist Bill Krause this week. And Bill Krause, who was communications director under Republican Governor Lee Dreyfus, said that he's wondering, he doesn't think the governor's going to run for re-election, and that perhaps Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen will. What's your reaction to that, Dan Kopanky?
I'd be stunned if he wasn't running for re-election. I mean, he's all over the state. He was in my part of the state yesterday in Cashton, talking about infrastructure improvements for Organic Valley, huge business over here in this part of the state. Again, with everything that he's doing, I know he's raising money. If he wants a seat at the national stage, he's got to run for re-election. He's got to be re-elected. There's no question in my mind about that, and I think he will.
Ruth, what do you think?
I think that this is the problem for Walker. If he runs and either loses or makes it in a squeaker, which the poll numbers that you cited show is a real possibility because folks are not that thrilled with him. He's been unbelievably divisive in our state. Our state, which has had, you know, in the Bill Krause days, a long history of Republicans and Democrats getting along well, of, you know, not having these hugely controversial and mean-spirited attacks on public workers and teachers, of not having these, you know, of having a healthy economy and not these cratering job numbers like Walker has. Folks don't like it, and they're angry and they're stirred up. And some of the angry and stirred up people will support Walker because that's what he represents for them. But, if he doesn't do well in the election, it really hurts his longer-term national political ambitions. And so it would be great if he could be reelected in a landslide for his political career, but if he can't, he may want to just work on his presidential campaign, and that's Krause's point. But
yep.
You know, he's got to think about whether this helps or hurts him.
We will have, by the way, Bill Krause on our Monday State Capitol Report at 7 o'clock on Monday morning. At 7:30, we'll talk to State Representative John Nygren about his daughter's battle with heroin and Nygren's package of anti-heroin bills. That's coming up on our State Capitol Report on Monday from 7 until 8. Meanwhile, this week, Walker's only official challenger, Democrat Mary Burke, got some endorsements by the national group Emily's List and Progressives United. Russ Feingold's PAC did endorse Mary Burke. Ruth Conniff, how significant is this?
I think it's significant. I think she's picking up steam. She's the only announced candidate, and, you know, people are falling in line behind her. I think that there's going to be, you know, potentially some other folks who declare, but right now, Mary Burke is it, and people got excited when she got in the race, you know, for a number of reasons. I mean, Emily's List is behind her. She would be the first woman governor in Wisconsin history, so that's significant. Women's issues are going to be big issues in this race because, you know, we've closed 4 Planned Parenthood clinics in Wisconsin. We've got, you know, transvaginal ultrasound now. We've got, you know, people can't get birth control. It's an ugly situation from even Republican women's point of view. So I think Burke appeals to a lot of folks who are unhappy with that. But most of all, you know, she was a business person. She ran Trex operations in Europe. And so on the job creator front, which is the word that Walker uses all the time, you know, Walker's been on the government payroll all of his life. And Mary Burke actually ran a business. And so that is another area where I think he is vulnerable and she could make a challenge. And she makes this, you know, she makes this point about Minnesota unemployment rate, 5.2%, Wisconsin, 6.8%. You know, we can do better. And that's a very salient issue in this race. So,
is she progressive enough, though, for the editor of The Progressive?
Well, yeah, that's a very good question. I sat down with Mary Burke and I did a long interview with her where I asked her the questions that are important to progressives. And she is not a great progressive. She is not on collective bargaining, which is the issue that really spiked those massive historic protests in Madison. She is not going to say that she's really going to the mat. I think a lot of union leaders are uncomfortable with her and with the fact that Trek is a non-union company and that, you know, has outsourced jobs to China. I think that's a concern for people. She's a public school advocate, and her personal volunteerism in the schools and her help creating this program, Avid Tops, which has genuinely helped low-income and minority students go on to college, is very impressive. But on the other hand, you know, her recent statement that she would leave the statewide voucher expansion in place and just not go further, I think is really disappointing for public school advocates, because that issue is potentially going to devastate our public schools in Wisconsin. So, you know, it's a mixed bag with Mary Burke. I think mostly people think that she is going to be the candidate. She's a, you know, multimillionaire and can self-finance. She's the only declared candidate. She's got a really impressive campaign operation. All the heavy hitters are getting behind her. And she'd be a lot better than Walker. But she's definitely not the candidate that comes out of that movement against Walker that was really inspiring for progressives.
Let me get Dan Kopanky. Do you think she, Mary Burke, is going to be a strong candidate against Governor Walker?
Oh, I do. She's a different type of Democratic candidate than Walker faced in the first two times, of course. And but I, you know, and the usual groups will back either Walker or this candidate that we saw back in 2010, and then with the recall in 12. I don't think you're going to see a big change there. But Mary comes from a different background than again his previous candidate, so that makes it you know, a different type of challenge. But at the end of the day, as I said earlier, Wisconsin is sound fiscally. It wasn't when Walker took office, and I think that means a lot to the taxpayers and to the voters out here.
We want to congratulate Kay in Milwaukee. She is our quiz winner. We asked which Wisconsin-based retail store is going to open its doors to holiday shoppers on Thanksgiving Day, and it is Kohl's. Kohl's said on Monday that it will open its doors at 8 p.m. on Thanksgiving and stay open all day Friday. A growing number of retailers have been doing this in recent years due to intense competition and the tough economy. Macy's also announced that it, too, would be opening on Thanksgiving. We have just a minute to go. Ruth, are you going to go shopping on Thanksgiving?
Absolutely not. I think those workers should be able to stay home and enjoy their Thanksgiving dinner, too.
Yeah. Dan, what about you?
No, absolutely not. If somebody wants to go shopping on Thanksgiving Day, just help yourself, but it won't be me.
All right. We'll have to leave it there for now. Thank you both very much for being with us.
Great to be here, John.
Thank you.
Ruth Conniff is editor of the Progressive magazine. Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Cynthia Schuster for producing and directing this show. Thank you also for calling in. Hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Silver bells, it's Christmas time in the city.